facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A marvelous Monday to you. Welcome to the program. So glad you're with me. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. Toll free on the Cale Clark Show. Of course, we also have an email address as well. Who doesn't? The age of email is far from over. Cale@relevantradio.com is the email address. We also have a Twitter account as well for the show. @CaleClarkShow is the handle. @CaleClarkShow. And of course, my personal account, @CaleClark, that is my own Twitter handle. And feel free to grab onto that and share it and tweet at me. And you can ask me a question because actually it's a mailbag Monday today. It's a hashtag mailbag Monday. Lots of great questions, which I have for you. Some of them are just doozies. I can't wait to get into those. But there's some room for more. So if you want to call in, once again, that number to call, 1-888-914-9149. Hope you had a great weekend. We are ready to get started with an awesome week on the show. And to kick it all off, we have a very special guest who didn't really have far to travel, just took a short break and walked right back into the studio. The host of the Drew Mariani Show, which of course precedes this one on Relevant Radio, and of course the author of the new book, Divine Mercy, which you can get for free at relevantradio.com, is my guest right now in studio. Drew, welcome to the program. How are you?
Cale, it's good to be here with you. You and I were fighting over who got to sit behind the host mic. And I'm like, no!
Well, you know, well, first of all, welcome to the show. I'm glad to have you on, even if you are a Philadelphia Flyers fan.
That's right.
Because, of course, the official hockey club of the Cale Clark Show is, of course, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Of course.
But I do have a healthy respect for the Flyers growing up. They're one of the they're one of my unofficial teams. Yeah. I liked a lot of teams other than the Leafs growing up. My favorite player was Wayne Gretzky, so I liked the Oilers. I liked the Blackhawks. Best uniforms in sports, in my opinion. Yeah. The Bruins. And the Flyers, too. When I was a kid, I think you always remember things. I don't want to digress too far with hockey here. Don't worry. We'll get to the book. Trust me. We'll get to the book. Don't worry.
Fine. Take your time.
Growing up, I think when things happen to your heroes growing up, you remember when you're a kid, like a tragedy of some sort happens much more than you do when you're an adult. And I remember when I was a kid, Pelle Lindbergh, the Flyers goalie, who I'm sure you'll recall, died tragically in an auto accident. And that really shook me up when I was a kid because I was a big fan of his. And I don't know if you're a Pelle Lindbergh fan or not, but...
I love hockey. I know you love hockey. You're Canadian. We had
it's
the Flyers, we had the Sixers, we had the Eagles, which were a major disappointment in terms of football. You know, every year they let you down. But the Flyers were one of those great winning teams. You know, I love their uniforms, too. I know you like the Blackhawks.
Absolutely.
That orange and black is still cool. I love the Flyers logo. So go Philly.
It is cool. And one of the things I used to try to trick people with growing up, Drew, is I used to try to tell people that Bobby Clark was my uncle. Same last name, same spelling, but it never really worked. But having said that, it's great to have you on the show. And a lot of listeners to Relevant Radio probably would be surprised to know this. I'm looking forward to chatting with you for a few minutes, Drew, because I think the longest conversation with you I've ever had has been about 3 minutes long.
Really?
Not that we don't like each other, but just that... Because I live in Toronto and I do the show from there, and you're in the Green Bay studios. We haven't actually met in person yet.
That's right.
Because of the pandemic, no one's been able to fly. So I haven't been down for a visit yet in the Relevant Radio studios, which I'm really looking forward to doing. But when I first came on to Relevant Radio back in July of last year with these shows, you were kind enough to have me on your show because your show obviously precedes mine. So for the last, I think, 3 minutes of your show one day, you had me on and just said, hey, everybody stick around, listen to Cale's show. And you're always one of the first people to welcome me to Relevant Radio. And I really appreciate that, Drew. So thanks a bunch.
Well, Cale, I remember you were guest hosting for Patrick. And I remember hearing your broadcast one day. I think I was out earlier in the day and came back and I said, who was the guy guest hosted for Patrick? And they said, oh, this guy named Cale Clark. And I said to the management, how much I liked your perspective, your delivery, your demeanor. And I think your show has been a blessing. I mean, two fronts. I love what you do after the Bassett broadcast here every day. In fact, my wife said the same thing. I mean, it's such an opportunity, a good short hit, 30 minutes to learn the faith and to really get a perspective you probably won't get anywhere else. And of course, you and I we're ships that pass in the night here because I got to get out of studio and the board operators are switching and you got to get in and we don't have much time to talk, but we should spend more than 3 minutes. I almost feel bad about that now. Like, that's all I gave you was 3 minutes.
Well, yeah, and I'm giving you a whole segment here. So, I mean, which one of us is the more generous? No, I'm only kidding.
I guess I owe.
No, all kidding aside, no, thank you for your kind words and checks in the mail. Really appreciate that. That's great. And please thank your good wife for me as well. And but it's so great to be partners with you in Relevant Radio. What a great team we have here. And let me ask you this. When did you get started with Relevant Radio? How long has it been for you?
You know, 2004. It was August of 2004 mm-hmm. that I joined the network. And it was just a fledgling little network at the time. I was a documentary filmmaker prior to that. And then I got into talk radio by God's providence and really by his will. I think he's a mission for all of us in life. And I was part of a network that broadcast nationally in this country. It was only on the air for about two and a half years, and it collapsed. It went out of business. And I never thought we'd see Catholic talk in the country again. And next thing you know, Relevant Radio, it rises from the ash like a phoenix. And I thought, my gosh, will this possibly work? And then I was approached, but I was really hesitant at first because I thought, I don't want to go down this road again. You know, you invest your time and everything else. And I was one of the first shows on the air. They had a morning air that was on, but then the host had left. So I remember coming in here in the studio I'm broadcasting out of today. I sat on a file box and did my show for like a month that way. And there was times the network almost didn't make it. But through God's providence and really just through his mercy, Relevant Radio is on the air today, reaching 220 million households just in the continental U.S. But as you know, we're heard globally. I get emails from South Africa, from over in Asia, from all over the world. Ireland, I mean, people are listening to you right now all over the planet thanks to the mobile app. So I joined then, and it has been a roller coaster ride, but I've fallen in love with radio. Like you, I think with time you only get better at it, you understand it better, and it's such an intimate medium. You know, you connect with your listeners. They really are family to you.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that. And that's great to hear that background and get a little bit of the flavor of, wow, you've been with Relevant Radio for almost 17 years. So that's amazing. Yep. And you did mention, you know, it was part of God's call for your life. And I think another part of God's call in your life, Drew, is obviously to spread the message of divine mercy. Tell me when you got involved with the divine mercy movement.
That's a great question because it's so bizarre. I loved filmmaking. I was a documentarian, and I had been approached by an organization to produce a documentary on a nun I knew nothing about. Her name was Sister Faustina Kowalska, you know, and she wasn't blessed. She wasn't, you know, canonized at the time. She was something venerable. And they sent me, I remember, the Diary of St. Faustina and a ton of material that I immersed myself in preparation for, you know, the script and the location shooting. And I went to Poland and I began this documentary work, and I fell in love with Divine Mercy. It was 1993, and I ended up at her beatification. And from that moment forward, Divine Mercy became an intimate part of my life. You know, it has resulted in miracles for me and for my family. It has freed me from anxiety and fear when you really can understand what the Lord requests of us when he asks us to trust. You know, it's such an essence of this devotion. And I've come to learn not just the life of Faustina, but so many of the wonderful figures around her who, like her, you know, trusted in the Lord, walked blindly, and the Lord used them in a powerful way to spread divine mercy. Divine Mercy today is the fastest grassroots movement in the history of the church. And
that's incredible.
You know, I get the opportunity to pray every day, 3 Central Time, here with our spiritual family here. And it's just, to me, it's an extraordinary blessing. But to my point, I was a documentary filmmaker back then, and it's weird how God works. You know, I never wanted to do anything but either be a documentarian or anchor TV news. That was what that's how I started. I thought I'd be anchoring news somewhere or making these films. And, you know, God brought me to my knees. He shut the doors on me. And no matter how hard I pushed against the doors, they remained locked, cemented, because the Lord had another destiny, another mission for me. And part of that was to sit here, you know, to one day talk with you, but also I think he wanted me to bring to the world in a way I could never have done before this message of mercy. And now I'm in love with talk radio. I just love this medium. There's nothing like it. And I love mercy, so they go hand in hand.
They sure do. And obviously, God, you may have shut some doors, but opened these others for you and then opened them really, really wide. And speaking of that opportunity, that wide open door that Scripture talks about to preach the gospel, You know, as Jesus says in the book of Revelation, I've set before you an open door. This new book on divine mercy, tell me about the genesis of that book. When did you decide to write this? How long did it take you to do it? And how can people get more information about this?
I was approached by Relevant. I was writing a book, believe it or not, on the moral vote. You know, when these election cycles come around, you know, what are the principles? And part of the issue with this book I wanted to do, I didn't want to make it too Catholic. There's a lot of Catholic vote books out there, you know?
Yeah.
I want to just use the principles that the founding fathers here had put in, and they're rooted in some, you know, first principles, you know? So, yeah. I mean, they're important, and I was trying to. But you know what? The deadline approached, I couldn't get it out. And Father Rocky said to me, why don't you write a book on divine mercy miracles? And I'm like, divine mercy miracles? I don't know if that's, you know, there's lots of miracles, but I don't know. And he sat down. And I said, you know, let me think about it. So I prayed about it. I came back. I said, I'd like to do a book on divine mercy. I'd like to tell people, teach people, inform people about God's mercy. You know, we see it throughout the Old Testament, as you know, and in the New Testament. Mm-hmm. And we see in this book, I highlight how God's mercy is there for everyone, whether it is a serial killer or a saint. And I tell stories of these people. I introduce them to the extraordinary life of Saint Faustina. I walk them through the thread that runs through the devotion, which is trust. And then, of course, we unpack for them issues like the chaplet and the image and the great feast of mercy. And I share about Faustina's encounters with the afterlife. She visited heaven and hell. And, I mean, there's so much. The problem was, you said, how long did it take me? I probably wrote it in about 8 months, 6 months, I think. So it wasn't long. It was. I've given speeches. I've written talks. I've done all sorts of stuff on it. I had so much material. My problem, Cale, was getting it down to 140 pages. No, 140 is the max. I'm like, I mean, I could write 340. There's so much stuff I felt like, I didn't put in.
Well, that could be in volume two, right?
Yeah, so that's what Patrick keeps saying, volume two. No, I this might be one and done for me. I don't know. It's you know why? Because it's a good 101. I've read a lot of different Divine Mercy books, and everyone brings something valuable. But this is a great 101 for people to just come to know God's mercy and to understand the principles. There's prayers in the back of it. There's an image of divine mercy, and the Lord attached promises to that. So I'm proud of it. I've done a lot of different work. I've been awarded for filmmaking and things like that. But this work here, I think, had a divine touch, and Satan did not want it out. It almost didn't get printed, too. I'm not going to go into details of that, but there was a time where this thing almost didn't come to light. And I think of what St. Faustina wrote in her diary. She had these beautiful words. The Lord told her, he said to her, the more beautiful the work, the greater the work, the greater the opposition. And I don't think Satan wanted people to know the power of the chaplet when their loved one is drawing their final breath. You know, in they're about to die, and the promises the Lord gave to that powerful prayer. Or what it means on Divine Mercy Sunday to tap into the graces and the promises that the Lord gave on that day, or the protection that comes with the image. There's so much stuff in this book that is just going to transform people's lives. The Sacrament of Reconciliation, I talk about that and what the Lord had mentioned to St. Faustina, how he's only hidden behind the priest, but it is the Lord himself who you encounter in that sacrament. She very eloquently talks about those encounters. So that's just some of what's in the book.
Really,
and I hope everybody will get it, because it's free. You know, it's free.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because obviously the Feast of Divine Mercy is coming up for Sunday after Easter. So we've got some time. It's a great time to read this book and to get yourself set up for that. Yeah, I know we're still in Lent, but it's going to come up soon. And how can people get a hold of the book?
So here's the deal. I mean, we sat down and we said, you know, what price do you put on a book like this? And Father Rocky's really big on you know, faith should be free type of philosophy. And I'm all about that. I don't think you can ever outgive God. You know, the more you give to God, the more he gives back. He'll never, ever be outdone in generosity. So we agreed, let's just do it for free. Let's give this book away. Relevant Radio doesn't want anybody to be inhibited by it. It's not a scam where you're going to be done, you know, with calls or phones or email or whatever. They want you to have the book, right? And they're even going to pay. They're going to pay to ship it to you. They're going to pay the shipping and the handling. So there's no strings attached. None at all. We'll even deliver it to your home. So you can get it simply by going to relevantradio.com. You'll see it on the front page there and just sign up for it. Or use the mobile app. That's another great way of doing it. But don't call the front desk, and don't call the call screener here, because we can't get it out. On Friday or Thursday, when I mentioned it for the first time, people were calling like crazy. Yeah, like, oh, no. Sure. So that's the way you do it. Totally 100% free, no strings attached. It's our gift. I always ask for a prayer in return. If you could pray for me, I'd appreciate that.
We'd be glad to do that for you, Drew, and we're so glad that Relevant Radio has made this available to people for free. Yeah, you're right. Father Rocky always says, you know, quoting the New Testament, of course, freely we have received, freely we must give. And an old professor of mine once said, the gospel is free of charge. It's heresy that comes with a price. And so we're going to get the good news of the gospel out to you through this book by Drew Mariani, Divine Mercy. So just go to relevantradio.com or to the app. You'll see the banner there. It's easy to find, or relevantradio.com/mercy. You can get your copy before they're gone, because there's only a limited print run. These aren't going to last forever, so get it while the getting's good. And Drew, it's great to run you down, man. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for the time. How much am I into you now? That's a good 19 minutes. What are you, 15 minutes?
Well, I was going to say you can send me part of your royalty check, but there are no royalties for this book. It's totally free.
That's
so
hilarious. Hey, Cale, thank you. Thanks for the
you
time.
You got it, Drew.
It's always good to talk with you, and we'll catch up soon, as always. I get to listen to you on my drive back, so keep up your good work, okay?
You got it. You got it. Thanks so much, Drew, for taking the time, and you can go home now. Your work is done.
All right. Sounds good, Cale.
Thanks. You got it. That was Drew Mariani, if you need him. And, of course, you know where to find him every weekday on Relevant Radio. His show comes right before mine on the schedule. And you can always listen to, of course, the podcast, as many do. If you're working during the day, you can't get to the show, you can always download all of our shows on relevantradio.com or through the app. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And I'm going to tell you a little funny story that Drew made me think of about my misadventures with Divine Mercy right after this break. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Yes, that was The Weeknd, who is boycotting the Grammys forever because he didn't get nominated for his latest album, his latest hot single. Of course, Blinding Lights, one of the best songs of the year. Kind of strange he didn't get any Grammy nominations. I don't know if you guys watched the Grammys last night. I did not get to see them live. But a lot of people are boycotting. He's like, these secret committees that decide who gets nominated, they've got to go. They've got to go. Who are these people? Anyways, they're obviously not in touch with reality if The Weeknd didn't get nominated. But having said that, it's great to get back with you here. We had really an award-winning conversation with Drew Mariani in the last segment. That was a lot of fun. I'm sure there'll be... What's the radio version of the Grammy Awards, Producer Lucas? Okay, whatever that is, I'm sure we'll be in line for one for Interview of the Year. No, I don't know. But it's great to be back with you. And it is, of course, The Cale Clark Show soundtrack, yes, should be nominated for a Grammy. We've got to get like a playlist up on the website, because a lot of people have been asking me, like, what are those tunes you're playing? So we'll get there. We'll get there. Remember, every one of us has a disc, right? On this playlist, there's the Cale Clark disc. There is Volume 2 featuring the tracks selected by Producer Lucas. Karen Moran, of course, has a 70s rock collection, which is disc number 3. Patrick Alog, I don't know what he's into. What do you listen to, Patrick?
I listen to movie music and Motown and jazz, but once in a while.
Okay. Well, by the way, while we're on the subject, major controversy about, you know, obviously everyone's doing March Madness brackets this month about everything, not just college basketball, but you did one about 80s movies, and you tweeted about this. And a lot of people were up in arms that you had in the first round, I think it was, you had The Princess Bride beating Top Gun.
Hey, that's just the way the brackets came out.
Well, that should probably disqualify you from working on this program, because you know our great love for Top Gun and the Top Gun soundtrack and all that good stuff. But I know Producer Lucas is offended, but my wife was actually thought that was a great choice, because The Princess Bride is her favorite movie. So she thought that was great. She thinks you're a smart guy.
Well, she has good taste, Cale.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. Well, anyways, one thing I did want to tell you guys, obviously we're gearing up for, in a couple of days, St. Patrick's Day, but some people have beaten you to it, because obviously we're all up in arms about the time change, going to daylight savings times, most of us, except for Karen Moran, who's just living the dream in Arizona. No time change for her.
You know what, Cale? I saw 4 fighter jets flying in formation this morning.
It's a sign.
It's an auspicious sign, yes.
I think it's a sign that Patrick Alog was wrong, but anyways.
It's a Maverick Monday.
It's a Maverick Monday. Yeah, you got it. That's good, Lucas. That was good. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I think we should do away with these time changes myself, because all the fans of the show in Arizona now have to wait an extra hour to listen to it. This is just not cool. But
you can catch it on the app.
Yeah, live. Catch it on the app. Catch it on the podcast. You can always do that. But what I wanted to say, Karen, I don't know if you know this, but it is already St. Patrick's Day. Speaking of time changes and time warps, it is already St. Patrick's Day in Newfoundland and Labrador today.
We're wondering how that's possible. Did anybody find an answer to that?
Well, there was some speculation. This is true, by the way. I'm not making this up. March the 15th is already, it's St. Patrick's Day today in Newfoundland and Labrador. Now, if you know time zones, now I grew up in the Atlantic time zone. I grew up in Nova Scotia. So Eastern time zone, an hour later than the Eastern time zone is the Atlantic time zone. And then an extra half hour after that is Newfoundland and Labrador. So for example, if I was watching Hockey Night in Canada, they would always say, 7 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Atlantic, 8:30 in Newfoundland and Labrador. Like the extra half
That's
hour.
So complicated. What's with the half hour?
Tell me about that.
Keep it round.
I know. Tell me about it. But it is already St. Patrick's Day, March the 15th in Newfoundland. And producer Lucas was speculating maybe it's a different guy. Maybe it's St. Patrick of Newfoundland. No, as it turns out, they always celebrate it on the Monday closest to St. Patrick's Day. And Patrick Alog is trying to research why that is. And if we get an answer, we will satisfy your burning curiosity, because inquiring minds want to know.
Do you see Patrick's writing? Maybe it's to have 2 days to celebrate.
Yeah, maybe they want to just extend the party. So,
Let's
go to Newfoundland. It's not too early. This is how they do it in Newfoundland. And yeah. So
you got your
there we go.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. But before we get on to more serious topics, because I'm not just killing time here, we do have to get to some serious questions that have been asked of the show. My favorite tradition of St. Patrick's Day is shamrock shakes at McDonald's. Have you heard of this?
Yummy.
Do they have those?
They look yummy. I saw they have them right now.
Okay, good. So they're coming back this year. All right, awesome. I'm always scared they're going to take them away, because like that was like a great childhood memory of mine growing up. Is like that was a major league treat to go to McDonald's and get shamrock shakes. So that was love it. Really gets me in.
Required tweeting. If you get a shamrock shake, tweet and tag
us. Get a picture
of
it. Yeah, tag the show at Cale Clark Show at Cale Clark.
Required
Do it.
Tweeting.
That's a great idea. Yeah. We'll be inundated, and McDonald's will be happy because they'll make
they
even more money.
Make up for shamrock shake sales when what they lose in fish sandwich sales since we favored the flounder.
Yeah.
Which I did try that on Friday when I was driving. Yeah,
I did too.
It's good. Yeah,
it was great. The Cajun spice flounder fish sandwich.
Yes.
At
Ralph
Popeyes.
And I had the Coachella pie pies.
Oh, okay.
Cajun flounder.
And how are they?
Well, it's a truck stop in Coachella. We were on our way to Southern Cal. And it tasted good. I'd say it's a nice,
awesome,
hearty fish sandwich.
Well,
pickles.
Believe it or not, as you probably know, Karen, this Friday you can actually eat meat because it's the Solemnity of St. Joseph. So how about
that?
Oh, yeah, so big feast day for Relevant Radio, for all of us. It's the year of St. Joseph, and we have these famous talks that are happening, 19 on the 19th. You're going to want to check that out on relevantradio.com. Get some more info on that. So yeah, it's great. So I mean, hey, continue on by all means. Fish is good for you too, and you can always. It's up to you if you want to continue your penance. But it is a solemnity. It's a big feast day. So patron saint of the Universal Church, Saint Joseph, coming up this Friday. Well, listen, lots of mailbag questions to get to. We got some really interesting questions this week, and I want to make sure we do at least a couple of them justice here. The first one comes to us from Edward S. I don't know whether that's Edward Scissorhands, maybe. I don't know. Is he still out there? Edward S., who's listening on Apple Podcasts to the show. Obviously, some people can't listen to the show live. They have to go the podcast route, and that's great, and that's why we have them. That's why we have them, so these shows can live on forever, for better or for worse. And if you do listen on a podcast provider of choice, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts from, We ask in your kindness, would you leave a rating and review? I'm not going to tell you what. Give it a 5-star rating. Sometimes you get these pop-ups on your apps. Give us a 5-star rating. I hate when people do that. So just if you like it, rate it. If you don't, that's fine too. You can rate it 1-star or less, you know. But hopefully you like it and give it a rating. Give it a review because it does help people to find the show. If you do that, and of course, you can always go to relevantradio.com or to the app to stream all the shows on Relevant Radio, including those of our sister program, The Faith Explained. And, of course, you can download them in podcast form, too. So, Edward S., possibly Edward Scissorhands, we're not sure, listening on Apple Podcasts, asks a question about Jesus and the law. Hello, Cale. I really enjoy the show. Thank you so much for all that you and the team do. My question is as follows. Last week, one of the gospel readings at Mass had to do with the Sermon on the Mount and Jesus' view of the Old Testament law. Jesus says, I have not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. My understanding was that the law does not apply in the age of the gospel, the age of grace. Can you explain this? Okay, that's a great question, Edward. That's a very common question. And really, it's not, I wonder where Edward might be coming from here, whether he's a Catholic or not, because I don't see this a whole lot in Catholic circles, but it's very common to get this question in some non-Catholic circles, in some Protestant circles. Now, I say some because clearly this is not applicable to everybody. In some Protestant traditions, there's this thought that the commandments, the law, they don't mean anything anymore. We're not under law, but under grace, as St. Paul writes in the New Testament. So we really don't need the law at all, including the Ten Commandments. It has no use for us in the New Covenant time. This is a bad misunderstanding. It's really, I would say, pretty much a heresy, because Jesus makes it very clear, as you noted. And this, by the way, this gospel reading came to us last week on, this was on Wednesday of last week, the gospel reading from Matthew chapter 5, when Jesus said to his disciples, do not think that I've come to abolish the law or the prophets. I've not come to abolish, but to fulfill. Amen, I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or the smallest part of a letter will pass from the law until all things have taken place. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do so will be called least in the kingdom of heaven, but whoever obeys and teaches these commandments will be called greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Now, this doesn't sound like someone who wants to throw out the Old Testament law. This is Jesus, of course, in the Sermon on the Mount. Now, one thing that is kind of abolished in the New Testament time, and this is maybe what leads to a lot of the confusion, especially when you read Paul's letters, the ceremonial works of the law. Jesus does not want to throw out the law in terms of the commandments, but the ceremonial works of the law, things like the dietary food laws of the Old Testament, things like circumcision. These are not applicable. Oh, people might, anyway, I don't want to get, I'm just going to go into this whole thing. No, I'm not going to go into that. But I will say this. Those are the aspects of the law. They're not really part of the law. They're ceremonial works that grew up around the law, if you will, kind of a hedge around the fence of the law. Obviously, in Jesus' day, in Paul's day, people practiced these things. But in the age of the church, obviously, practicing Jews still do them today. But in the age of the gospel, and a great place you can find this, by the way, is in Acts chapter 15, the Acts of the Apostles, the Council of Jerusalem talks about all this stuff. That's a big theme in the early movement of the church, as outlined in the Acts of the Apostles, as the church is spreading to non-Jews, to Gentiles who are accepting Jesus as the Messiah. Do they have to become, in a sense, Jewish before they become believers in the Jewish Messiah? Do they have to undergo circumcision if they're not circumcised? That could be a major barrier to evangelization. You know, I want to accept Jesus, but I have to have an operation. Oh, I'm not sure about that. So in a very practical sense, this did help the spread of the gospel. But at the end of the day, this is what's going on here. So in terms of the commandments, the law is good. The law is given by God. And I remember, gosh, when I was in Israel working on an archaeological dig as part of my grad studies in New Testament, I was privileged to attend a mass with a group of Catholics who had converted from Judaism. And they actually celebrated the Mass in Hebrew, so they were Hebrew Catholics. None of those – by the way, a lot of people don't know. Every year there are tens of thousands of people, maybe even more, who convert from Judaism to Christianity. A lot of them become evangelical Protestants, if you will, but a lot of them become Catholics. Roy Shoman is a good example of a Hebrew Catholic who's written a lot of books about this. Salvation is from the Jews, Honey from the Rock. I've mentioned him on the show before. There are a lot of Hebrew Catholics. And none of those people who were at this Hebrew Mass that I went to in Jerusalem, none of them who had come to believe in Yeshua HaMashiach, which means Jesus the Messiah, none of them would have said they had changed religions. They didn't view the Catholic Church as a new religion that replaced Judaism. Rather, it was Judaism, but with the Messiah having come. So they get it. When they walk into a Catholic parish, they see the altar of sacrifice. They see the tabernacle. They see the ambo, which is a synagogue thing. So they get all the Old Covenant, Old Testament references there, to be sure. It makes sense for them in a way that maybe it doesn't make so much sense for those who convert to Catholicism from another faith or from no faith at all. And so they saw right away, when you talk to these guys, they see the continuity, the inner logic of Jesus' teachings when it comes to the Old Testament. Now, considering that Jesus of Nazareth was a faithful Jew, this really shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. But throughout the centuries up until even now, a lot of scholars, a lot of theologians, they teach the opposite. They say that Jesus broke clean with the old covenant religion of his day, railed against its quote-unquote legalism, and focused entirely instead on God's mercy and love, in quotation marks. And that's the attitude I was kind of talking about before. And without a doubt, I mean, we were just talking about divine mercy with Drew Mariani. Without a doubt, Jesus delighted to dispense God's mercy to people who repented of their sin. But here's the thing, there's no opposition between mercy and law. In fact, in so many ways, God's law is his mercy. It's an expression of his mercy. And if you read the New Testament carefully, it shows that Jesus was in no way opposed to the law given to Moses. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. It's a Mailbag Monday, just opening up some questions, some burning questions from listeners. So if you have your Bible handy, or if you have your Bible app handy, just open it up real quick. And take a look at really what you need to focus on. One of the Gospels you need to focus on specifically with this is the Gospel of Matthew. In Matthew's Gospel, Jesus gives five major talks, if you will, five major teaching discourses that represent the crucial gist of his teaching. Now, why do you think, just think about this for one second, why do you think there are five major talks or teaching blocks of Jesus in Matthew? Does that sound like anything from the Old Testament to you? It should, because that should remind you of the five books of Moses, the Torah, the first five books of the Bible traditionally attributed to Moses. So the first talk that Jesus gives is the Sermon on the Mount, chapters 5 through 7 of Matthew, and that's what Edward was asking about, the gospel taken from Matthew chapter 5, which was from last Wednesday's Daily Mass. The second major talk that Jesus gives is called the Missionary Discourse. He sends out these missionaries, if you will, in chapter 10, two by two, to go preach. Then there is the discourse or the talk about the parables in chapter 13. There's the community discourse or the talk that he gives about the church in chapter 18 of Matthew. And then the fifth and final speech that Jesus gives in Matthew is in chapters 24 and 25, and that's called the eschatological discourse. It's really about the end of the world and really the end of the Jerusalem temple establishment. I'm talking about the corrupt religious leaders of Jerusalem. The temple, of course, was destroyed in 70 AD, which is kind of a sneak preview of the end of the world. We talked about that a lot in our Gospel of Mark course on The Faith Explains. You can check out those podcasts, and also in the Book of Revelation course that we did prior to the one we're doing now in Genesis. So those podcasts are all available to you. So it's pretty obvious, really, what Matthew is doing here. He does this intentionally, and there's a lot of other things technically I could get into, how we know that he's arranging it in five different teaching blocks of Jesus, just like the Pentateuch, the five books of Moses. Jesus is presented in Matthew as a new Moses. Again, we don't have time to get into all that stuff. We could do a whole show on that one day, but why does Matthew do this? Why does he present Jesus as a new and greater Moses? Well, in large part, it's to deal with these allegations by some people in the time of the early church that Jesus and his followers intended to abolish the law of Moses, especially people, other Jews were saying, you know, especially these Jews who had come to believe in Jesus as Messiah, no, you can't believe in this guy. He wanted to abolish the law of Moses. He can't be from God. Oh, really? Is that what he was trying to do? So that's part of what Matthew's gospel is trying to answer here. I think the primary audience for Matthew is a Jewish audience. Now, obviously, Gentiles can read it too. It's for everybody, but the original audience, it's meant to convince other Jews that Jesus really is the Messiah, and he's got the credentials for it. So we see this especially in the Sermon on the Mount. So we see five major talks. One of those talks, the first one, is the Sermon on the Mount. And how does it start off? It starts off with Jesus on a mountain, and he gives the crowd 10 Beatitudes. You say, hold on here, I thought there were 8 Beatitudes. There are actually 10. If you read it closely, there are 10. We could get into that another time too, but 10 commandments, 10 Beatitudes. And then Jesus has these five, what are called the antitheses. Now, what's an antithesis? Well, I mean, it's when Jesus says, you have heard it said, but now I say to you. And this is in the context of this whole verse of, I have not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. Until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter will pass from the law until all is accomplished. So he also says, people who break the law will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever does the law and teaches other people to do it, do the commandments, will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. That doesn't sound like a lawbreaker to me. And then he says in verse 20 of Matthew chapter 5, that if you're going to enter the kingdom of heaven, your righteousness must be greater than that of the scribes and the Pharisees. That's a remarkable thing for Jesus to say. Because in his day, those very scribes, the teachers of the law, and the Pharisees were considered the authority on the interpretation of the law of Moses. So really the question is here in the Sermon on the Mount, and the question in Matthew's gospel in general is, who has the true interpretation of the law? It's not about, is the law bad? No, the law is good. But who has the right interpretation of the law? Is it Jesus and his followers, the church? Is it the Pharisees or the scribes? Is it some other group? The Herodians? The Zealots? No, I mean, so these are all groups that were in competition for people's hearts and minds. And so that's why Jesus goes on to show, you have heard it said, but I say to you in these five antitheses, that his interpretation of the law, as practiced by himself and his followers, is the right interpretation. And this is incredible stuff. And so Jesus is often quoting the Ten Commandments, like you've heard it said, do not commit adultery. But I say to you, whoever looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So what's going on here? The Ten Commandments deal with the outward activity, the outward action, don't do it. But his new law in the Sermon on the Mount deals with the inner action, the inner person, at the level of the heart. And again, I'm fond of using this example of a peanut. You've got the shell, which is the outside part that you can see, but then there's the nut inside. And you and I, let's face it, are nuts sometimes, but that needs to be good too. The inside needs to be made whole, and you've got to do it from the inside out. So that's in a lot of ways what's going on here. And so, in other words, Jesus is not, the law is good. This is why when you read the Ten Commandments, the Catechism is a huge section on the Ten Commandments, because it's still relevant for Christian life today. So, Edward, I hope that answers your question. And we'll be back with more on this Mailbag Monday on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio right after this.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the show. It's a Mailbag Monday, answering your questions. Some of them come through email, kale@relevantradio.com. You can always email your questions to us, and we'll try to get them on the air. We do this from time to time. You can also tweet at me at Kale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And, of course, you can always call the show and talk to me live, 1-888-914-9149. We're going to go to the phones right now. Margie is calling from Sacramento, California. Margie, welcome to the show.
It's Margie. How are you?
Oh, it's Margie. Sorry, Margie.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. I just wanted to ask you how you felt about taking our captain away from San Jose, Joe Thornton.
Oh, Joe Thornton. Yes, yes. Well, yeah, for hockey fans, you know what I'm talking about here, and you know what Margie's talking about. Well, Joe Thornton, of course, who for many years played for the San Jose Sharks, and in the past for the Boston Bruins, he is now a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, you know, a lot of players want to do this, Margie, especially if they're from Ontario. They grew up as Maple Leaf fans very often, and they want to finish their career with the Maple Leafs, and that's what's going on with Joe. But I'll tell you what, though, Joe is also, he still wants to win the Stanley Cup, and of course, the Leafs have a great chance to do that. And from all accounts, everything I've heard, he's been so important to our team, in the locker room especially. He's a great leader. Great wisdom. He just adds so much, and the players uniformly are very impressed with him. Even if he's not necessarily the player that he used to be when he was younger, he's 41 years old now, but he's hurt right now. I think he's still hurt, but we hope he'll come back, and we're happy to have him. We're happy to have him. I'll tell you that, Margie.
I'm glad he's appreciated then. I feel better.
Yeah, we'll take good care of him. Promise you that, Margie. All right. And enjoy your day in beautiful Sacramento, California, the capital city of California. How about that? So thanks for calling, Margie. Appreciate you. And I know you're on hold for a little bit, so thanks for sticking with us. And we're going to go now to John in San Diego, another beautiful city in California. I love San Diego. John, welcome to the show. How are you?
Yes, thank you. I had a question. I was just reading a quote by St. Thomas Aquinas, and I'm paraphrasing, but it says that a man is not truly happy unless he lives in love. And I was wondering what St. Thomas Aquinas was talking about and when he says living in love. I have some ideas, but I kind of wanted to get your take on it.
Well, thanks, John. Thanks for the question. Appreciate that. And you know, I wish I were more of an expert on St. Thomas Aquinas, the angelic doctor. I would say I have a very pedestrian knowledge of his works. I remember reading the Dumb Ox by G.K. Chesterton, and a lot of Aquinas scholars. That's a great book if you want to do some introductory reading on St. Thomas Aquinas. G.K. Chesterton wrote this book about him, and Aquinas scholars were amazed that he was able to do this, not being a professional scholar. It's not that long. Not being a professional scholar of Aquinas and his works, he was just an amazing guy, Chesterton. But Aquinas was too, obviously. And this quote, I'm not super familiar with it. No man is happy unless they live in love. But it does make sense because we were created, of course, to love God and to love people. That's really what it's all about when you boil it all down. And it kind of reminds me of something else too. A question that we get asked a lot as Catholics is, especially by not everybody, but some Protestant groups. If you have a Protestant friend, maybe they've asked you this: why do you Catholics have crucifixes in your parish? Don't you know that Jesus has risen from the dead? I don't know if you've heard that question. Yes, we do know. We were the first to proclaim this, of course. But why do we have the crucifix, and why do we display it so prominently in our churches? Well, one answer to that question is as follows. Yes, the entire Paschal mystery is really, really important. The suffering, the death, the burial, the resurrection, the ascension of Christ, to be sure. But one of the reasons why we like to focus on the cross, on the crucifix, is that this is the greatest act of love that has ever been seen on the face of the earth. Everyone is looking for love. We're looking for love in all the wrong places very often, but everyone is looking for love. This is love. Because what is love? It's not a fuzzy feeling. It's a total gift of self. Love is a total gift of self. And this is exactly what we see Jesus doing on the cross. The wedding vows in the Catholic Church are based on this. They're based on the act of Jesus. When Jesus, you know, the first question that they ask you when you come to the altar, the bishop, priest, or deacon will say to the couple who's getting married in the church, and by the way, the couple confer the sacrament on one another. The celebrant, the official of the church is only there as a witness on behalf of the church. That's something a lot of people don't know. It's the one sacrament you can kind of do yourself, if you will. But having said that, and of course you could baptize someone in the case of an emergency as well. I know. But here's the point. The first question that they ask you when you're doing the wedding vows is, have you come here freely? Or is your mother-in-law making you do this, as I joked the other day? No, no, that's a bad answer. Love has to be free. And Jesus says, basically, you know, he gave his life. He said in John's gospel, he said, no one takes my life from me, but I lay it down of my own free will. It wasn't so much that Judas betrayed him or the Roman soldiers nailed him to the cross. He freely chose to give his life for you and I. The second question that they ask you is really part of the first question when you get married in the church. Have you come here freely in order to give yourselves without reserve to one another? In other words, do you give yourself totally, or are you holding something back? Well, what did Jesus do? He said, this is my body given up for you. He gave it all. He gave everything, you know, until the last drop of blood dripped into the sand. That's what we have before our eyes all the time with a crucifix. So it's a great catechism unto itself. There's no end to what you can learn from meditating on the death of Christ. The third question, will you be faithful unto death? Jesus says, I am with you until the end of the age. That's what he tells his bride, the church, before he ascends into heaven. He will always be with us, and especially in the Eucharist. He is always with us until the end of time. And then the last question, will you accept children as a gift from God, and will you raise them according to the laws of Christ and his church? Well, Jesus and his union with his bride, the church, has that been a fruitful union? Absolutely. How many billions of us have been baptized, born again into the family of God, the church? We're born once naturally through our human parents. We're born supernaturally at the baptismal font, which is the womb of the church, born again of water and the Spirit, as Jesus said to Nicodemus in John chapter 3. And that passage was always in reference to baptism throughout the entire history of the church. Nobody ever interpreted that as meaning anything other than baptism until after the Protestant Reformation. So that's something a lot of people are surprised to know. So I don't know if that helps to answer your question, John, but we are created for love, and Jesus shows us the way.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's great. That's a great insight. Because I'm doing a consecration to St. Joseph with my two biological brothers.
That's
and
awesome.
We had one of my brothers, he's in a wine tasting group. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about, he had a story about an old man, a couple, old man maybe in his 70s or 80s. And he was talking about, he was like an engineer, and his wife was very successful. And he's talking about how he was happy because he, you know, let his wife pretty much take all the responsibilities, and he kind of, you know, let her run everything, I guess, in paraphrasing the discussion that my brother and the old man were having. And we were talking about and reflecting about what real joy is. Because that's look, it's just on the face of it, it's, you know, devoid of reality, what the old man was sharing. It's like,
yeah, let me jump in here, John, just because we've only got a few seconds left in the show. I'm really sorry to have to cut you off there, but yeah, when you talk about joy, how's that spelled? J-O-Y. Jesus first, others second, yourself last. I think that's a great way to look at that. You will have joy if you do that. And putting others first means serving them. And so husbands do need to help their wives and serve their wives and help with the housework. And that's my opinion. I need to get better at that for sure. My wife's probably listening. I might be in trouble after the show. But yeah, that's one practical way. Because love is deeds, right? Love is deeds, not sweet words, as one Saint Jose Maria liked to say a lot. Lucas Holt produced. Karen Moran works social media. Not even having to change her time zone. How about that? Patrick Alog screened the call. Drew Mariani stopped by. Thanks, Drew, for doing that. Get his book, relevantradio.com/mercy. Tim Rees up next. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.